This is Listening, a music-minded podcast for the Dallas Morning News. I'm your host, Hunter Hawk. That beat behind me belongs to Dr. Dre. It's from The Watcher, the opening song on his sophomore album 2001, which actually came out in 1999. The Watcher at the time reintroduced us to a Dre who'd hit the heights of musical success, but also found that with fame came some paranoia. An expert producer and a rapper whose messages were never throwaways, he still felt he had something to prove. You'd think that feeling would have gone away in the last 16 years as Dre rose from producer and best-selling artist to record label and headphone mogul. He's now part of the Apple industrial complex for the love of beats. But it turns out Dre has a bit more to say and something else to prove to today's listeners. Last week brought us his long-awaited third album, just days after its existence was first confirmed on Apple's content-rich new radio station by the doctor himself. And it wasn't Detox, the long-gestating and ultimately shelved LP whose absence made hip-hop fans crazy for years. This was a different project altogether, one rooted in Dre's own biography. Its name comes from the California city where he began to flourish during his NWA days, Compton. One of his many A-list protégés, Kendrick Lamar, has kept the spirit of Compton alive and in living color in his last two albums. But the city has yet to receive the kind of intense album-length tribute that Dre's giving it now. I knew I'd be tempted to gush over Dr. Dre's new album no matter what it sounded like. So I tried my best to temper my excitement as I fired it up for the first time last week. That attempt at containment pretty much failed after the cinematic intro ended and the first real song, Talk About It, began. Not only was it exciting to hear the drama and musicality so tied to Dre's compositions, but one of the first voices heard in the song belongs to a young talent from our neck of the woods.
We don't even want to talk about it. What? I don't know everything. One thing I do know. One thing I do know. One day I'ma have everything. One day I'ma have everything. It was all a dream. It was all a dream. It was all a dream.
I want it all. I just bought California. The mother states ain't far behind it either. I remember selling instrumentals off of
Justin Morley, a rapper and singer who slings Compton's unforgettable first hook, hails from Garland and cut his teeth in the Dallas rap scene. Thanks to some attention and a push from fellow Dallasite and longtime Dr. Dre collaborator, the DOC, Morley, who's listed as Justus, J-U-S-T-U-S, is now one of Dre's only non-household name signees on the Aftermath label. And his moment in Dre's spotlight on Compton doesn't end with the song Talk About It. He's one of the many voices on the album intended to fill the big shoes of the late singer Nate Dogg, who before his passing could always be counted on to smooth out a Dre tune with a killer hook. Now it's our local dude, Justus, who helps connect two crazy good verses from Dre and Kendrick Lamar on the album's ninth track, Deep Water. But what I believe to be Morley's finest moment on Compton comes on track 4, It's All On Me.
Listen to me. It's kind of funny how they fall back on me. I used to never get a call back on me. Before the money, they didn't see me like
it's
dog.
It's the kind of song you want to drive around to, playing it on blast. It soothes the soul and begs you to relax, but it also allows the good doctor to lay out some key moments from his legendary life story. A story which is now also on the big screen in the NWA biopic Straight Outta Compton. That movie's filming was ultimately what inspired Dre to make an entirely new album, one that focused on his early struggles and the trials that came with his overwhelming musical success. Other artists he's introduced to the world are back for this new record, including Eminem on a typically shockworthy verse at the end, and Snoop Dogg, harder than he sounded in years, on two songs in the middle. In the past 7 days, I've vibed with this Compton album endlessly, from the gym, to the car, to the train, to the cubicle. Its appeal and its newness haven't yet faded. From the Kendrick verses to those fat Dre beats, it's a satisfying experience. Well, save for one uncomfortable murder fantasy skit in the middle, That's a tool of past records that Dre didn't necessarily need for Compton to feel complete. But hey, I can always hit the skip button. And when I get to that last track, Dre's most confessional song ever, a song called Talking to My Diary, I'm reminded that he has referred to this Compton album as his grand finale. God, I hope he's lying. I hope he's planning to pull a Jay-Z. If not, I'll still be looking for that Justice album down the road.
That I came from the ghetto, so a new house for my moms, that's special. I let you go and shop until your feet get tired, in a new Benz just for you to ride in. When I didn't have it, you provided. Don't be surprised that I built an enterprise, and my house got a view of the city like a high rise. Yeah. I'm just talking to my diary. I'm just talking to my diary. When I open up my book, I think about the world later. No ink in the pen, no lines on the paper. I'm just talking to my diary. I'm just talking to my diary.
Dr. Dre already set the tone for this episode with his triumphant return, so it's no surprise that the theme today is legacy. In the next three segments, we'll check in on the surviving members and friends of Dallas punk band Spectre 45 as they plan a one-off reunion concert. I'll also pay a visit to the site of Dallas's most important, but also most overlooked musical legacy, the downtown building where bluesman Robert Johnson recorded songs that changed music forever. And finally, the Dallas Morning News' Don Burks returns to talk about five legacy artists who've captured the imagination of her six-year-old daughter. Let's get to it. First up, the one-show return of Spectre 45, a greaser punk band whose tragic story is still being felt in the streets of Deep Ellum. On a recent Saturday afternoon at Dallas's Underpass Bar near Exposition Park, nine former members and associates of the punk band Spectre 45 gathered to rehearse. They were putting final touches on a planned reunion concert, but consider the tragic story behind the Deep Ellum group, and it's tempting to call it a revival. While the stage is littered with guys who collectively form the history of Spectre 45, there are two very important players missing. Nearly 5 years ago, the band and the larger Dallas music scene were shaken to the core by the suicide deaths of Spectre 45's lead singer and songwriter, Frankie Compagna, and its bassist, Adam Carter. They took their own lives within months of each other, leaving behind drummer Anthony Delabano, Frankie's best friend since childhood, to pick up the pieces. I tried interviewing Anthony a few months after he lost his best buddies and bandmates. We had a nice conversation, but everything still seemed too raw. He needed time to cope. What I'm glad to find out now is that all along, he had the shoulders of these eight other guys who are joining him at this revival show at Three Links on Saturday. These days, things have leveled out for the musical brethren of Frankie and Adam, both of whom sadly personified the concept of live fast, die young. At 29, Anthony has just welcomed his first child into the world. He's given up the kinds of vices that likely helped contribute to the downward spiral of his bandmates, and he's taken a leadership role in corralling all these former Spectre players for a concert that will span the band's near decade in the Dallas scene. It's a giant task, one that requires color-coded dots for different bassists and change-ups in the set list. There's a Google Doc involved. Very punk, someone jokes during the rehearsal session. Yet they run through their intended performance as if they're still a well-oiled, active band.
Remember the tempo.
I want to play.
After they finish their sweaty, breakneck, hour-long rehearsal inside the empty bar, they all sit down at a table to talk about the upcoming show, as well as the memories of Frankie and Adam. Anthony tells me he was reluctant to do this show when it was announced without consultation by a well-meaning friend and fan of the band, but he came around after realizing that many who appreciated Frankie's legacy and loved his songs had never had a chance to see him perform.
So, I mean, no one's ever going to get to see Frankie and Adam play, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But this is the closest thing to it, and this is also us getting their music out there one final time. Yeah. My personal intentions, I don't know what the guys is, I don't really care about playing again, but this whole experience has been awesome.
Yeah.
And we're all talking about, man, this is going to suck when it's over with.
Yeah.
Because we can't really very well go on tour with the Spectre 45.
In addition to the former members who'd come in and out of Spectre's lineup over the years, Anthony was able to convince Frankie's childhood friend Cody Bigham to travel back and forth from his home in Houston to rehearse for the upcoming show. Cody will step into Frankie's lead singer role for most of the songs at Three Links. I closed my eyes while listening to him rehearse and could almost picture the late singer. He nails both the intensity and the attitude, but he says it wasn't easy to get into the groove.
It was really tough playing his songs, you know. At first, and now I think I'm more celebrating it than anything, man. Such an awesome opportunity to be able to do it and to be able to sing the words that came from his heart. And, it was hard at first.
All of it collected into one show is kind of...
Yeah, this is a time period, too. This is a time warp. It's like you got all sorts of different time periods of the band come together, and some of the songs are really hard for me to sing because, you know, he might have been 16, 17 years old, you know what I mean? I'm like, holy shit, I can't go that high.
I have to sing my own
kind of version of some of them.
It's obvious these guys take the one-off show seriously, even if their audience at Three Links will likely give them a rousing reception no matter what. People loved Frankie. He was held to a high personal and creative standard set by his well-known artist father, Frank Sr., but he also lived harder in his short life than most folks do over decades. His friends want to honor his and Adam's complicated life stories by playing better than they've ever played. Former bassist James Abston and the others make that clear.
We have to perform, all of us, to the highest standard that we can possibly do so that we can show these people that we're not just throwing this thing up here loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
You know,
well, but at the same time, I feel like our biggest critics are ourselves.
Oh, yeah,
of course. But these people sit around and they listen to the albums, you know, and they listen to the songs over and over again, and they have a certain way that they hear those songs. And we want to give that to them, you know what I mean? We want to give them the satisfaction of hearing the songs the right way or the way they were used to hearing them.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a seriousness to the intentions, but the mood in the room is celebratory. Still, I'm not sure what I'll get when I ask the guys a question about their memories of playing in Spectre 45.
Now that you have these years of perspective and, like, different lives totally, like, what do you see when you look back on your time with the band? And it's pretty wild times, I'm sure. Like,
from what I can remember of those times, lots of fun. Lots of fun. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
I mean, do you want us to tell a quick story?
Sure, if you want to.
I mean, yeah, we all have fucking stories. Think of Naughty.
Yeah, I can tell. He said Naughty incriminated when he hit record.
Well, you want to talk about the BB Gun Wars down in Lockwood Park?
That begins a raucous round of stories about Frankie, most of which can't be printed or detailed for an all-ages readership. I hear about drunken fights, run-ins with the law, public urination, childhood pranks gone very wrong, and many other real-life instances of punk kids not giving a damn. It becomes clear talking to these guys that Frankie's vice-fueled lyrics were no exaggeration. But once the stories and laughs subside, it comes back around to Anthony's experience of losing his musical and emotional lifelines 5 years ago. He's getting closer to acceptance of the past, he says, and now he wants to pass on his growing sense of peace to those in the musical community who still actively mourn Frankie and Adam.
I've had to deal with this a lot more face first than most people do, because people like that don't know me necessarily come up to me and talk to me about it and all this kind of stuff, but there's a lot of people out there that are still really not dealing with it super well. And I want people to be able to look at the music, listen to music, and smile.
Right now, I drink 10 beers.
Former members and friends of Spectre 45 will dub themselves simply 45 when they take the stage at Three Links on August 15th. But even if you don't make that show, look up Frankie Compagna's music. It'll give you a feel for some of Deep Ellum's fastest and loudest modern times. And now for something a lot older, but still highly relevant. I step into the space where one of America's most influential musicians made some of his best-known tracks. And it's right here in our fair city.
I got stones in my pathway, and my road seem dark at night. I got stones in my pathway, and my road seem dark at night.
That's Stones in My Passway, one of 13 songs recorded by Seminole bluesman Robert Johnson in June of 1937, inside a building located at 508 Park in downtown Dallas. That's right, Dallas was the city where Johnson, whose technique and remarkable talent has influenced every generation of musicians following his own, made nearly half of his entire body of recordings. The next summer after those sessions, Johnson died at the age of 27. Ensuring that those Dallas recordings, along with others made in San Antonio, would be some of the only documents of his tremendous gift. The blues, rock and roll, every other genre of music in America, owes a little something to Johnson and his contemporaries. The Dallas recordings were done at the Brunswick Record Corporation on the third floor of the Deco-style 508 Park building that also housed Warner Brothers Film Exchange. You can see the restored Warner Brothers signage when you drive down Yonge Street today. Once under threat of demolition, believe it or not, 508 Park is now owned by the nearby First Presbyterian Church of Dallas, which is renovating the building and incorporating it into a larger development project called Encore Park. Encore Park will not only preserve the musical history of that famous third-floor recording studio, but it will also include a community art museum, a community garden, and a continuation of its Stewpot homeless outreach program that already exists there. Pat Bywaters, a self-taught music historian who's devoted years of his life to this preservation project, gave me a tour of the 508 Park site recently, in advance of this weekend's outdoor show featuring Robert Johnson's own grandson, Stephen. Stephen Johnson will perform in an amphitheater there that's been finished as part of the Encore Park project's first phase. Bywaters can hardly contain his passion about the history made inside 508 Park. As he prepares to show me where Robert Johnson and many other legends of blues, country, and Mexican music recorded, he talks a little bit about his own discovery of the premier blues man's work during his early 80s college days in Austin.
But there was just, there was all sorts of music going on in Austin in the 80s, early 80s. I always was just kind of keep gravitating to the blues. And so I think really the first real Johnson thing I ever heard was in this history rock and roll class. And then that just kind of opened everything else up.
Yeah.
Because I went and bought King of the Delta Blues.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's what I did.
Or King of the Delta Blues Singers. And, just kind of kept expanding from there.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think when I bought it, you know, there's always that thing where you're like, wow, it's just so advanced. Like, you can't even imagine how this came out of someone at that time. But it's like, you know.
Yeah, it was definitely different. It was definitely different.
Yeah.
If you listen to all the other stuff, I mean, there were some other great blues players that recorded here, like Black Boy Sean, who was a piano player at Houston. There was a guy named Dusky Daly that I can't hardly find anything on the guy.
Part of Bywater's job as executive director of Encore Park is to make sure that the restoration of 508 Park reflects the historic sessions that happened there. He's done a lot of detective work, researching decor, documentation, and even building layout. Eventually, he says, that historic recording space that was once makeshift will be developed into a community studio, open to musicians of all stripes who will get the opportunity to document their own music in a professional quality setup.
You get paid to do that.
And I had seen where this recording studio space will be open to anyone like who wants to come and try it. Like, who knows who could be discovered? Who knows what kind of talent is just untapped, you
right?
Know?
And how it might get inspired when it comes to play here.
Yeah,
yeah. So I'm real excited about it. I think it's you know, I'd like to do, you know, NPR does the series that they call Tiny Concerts.
Mm-hmm. Tiny Desk.
Or Tiny Desk, yeah. So, that's right. You know, I'd love to do something like that.
Yeah.
Because I just think, I mean, those are really great because it's intimate and, you know, it's got that kind of thing. But what we have here that they don't is this.
So you're standing
really
on the hallowed.
Yeah, you're standing on hallowed ground here, as far, especially around, you know, anything that falls in that Americana category, which is the really broad category of, gee, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It all has its roots here.
It's then that Bywaters hooks up his phone to some tiny speakers on a crate in the empty third floor of 508 Park. He wants to play me some of what was recorded there in the 30s. He cues up a Johnson song.
And I think this is the spot where they get the recordings out here. I'll tell you why.
Knowing this is likely the spot where it all happened, I suddenly can't form words. Thankfully, before tears form, he moves on to a Bob Wills song.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Bob Wills, early Bob Wills. A lot of early Bob Wills was just straight out jazz, like this one.
Oh, yeah.
Keep knocking, but you can't come in.
Mm-hmm. Here's what they had.
Standing in that spot, hearing those sounds, thinking about a history of music in Dallas that's been damn near hidden in plain sight until this renovation project, it's powerful. And I'm elated to know that there's a good chance many more lifelong music students like me will get to experience the same thing in the future. Find out more about this weekend's show at the Encore Park Project, and consider making a donation to the effort at EncoreParkDallas.org. And now, another look at how the future finds its way to the past. The DMN's Dawn Burks gives us today's top five, which is focused on the artists who've managed to carve out places in the heart of her musically inclined 6-year-old daughter, Faith.
A good song can transcend not only genre, but generations. Music can bring people together, even in their own homes. I have proof. In my house, I can put on Talib Kweli's In This World or George Michael's Faith and get instant karaoke, and that's from the 6-year-old. I get no greater joy than having an impromptu dance-off or sing-off with her. Even if she calls Earth, Wind, and Fire September, body ya, whatever. I heard what she meant. She also said no thank you when I told her I loved her this morning. All I heard was the number one song on her top five, September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. The longtime Hitmakers song is a recent addition to my home's dancing music. I couldn't tell you when or how my little girl heard this one, but I'll tell you the story of how I found out that she loved it. We were sitting at the dining room table. Faith was coloring in her Inside Out activity book, and I was watching her, as I do sometimes, because she's my miracle baby. And I heard this song. Now, I had just seen EWF in concert, and I thought maybe my ears were still ringing. So it took me a second or two before I realized that she was the one singing it. People talk about divisions in family because of age gaps and other circumstances, but again, music can be a unifier. This song is one of those that doesn't even have to be passed down from one generation to the next. It will be found. Number two, You Can't Touch This by MC Hammer.
My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. When a mind too round and too hyped, it feels good when you know you're down. A super dope homeboy from the Oak Town, and I'm known as such, and this is a beat you can't touch. I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know you can't touch this.
I know grown men, okay, my nephews, who disavow any knowledge of having danced and or listened repeatedly to MC Hammer. I'll give them that on some of his later stuff. But You Can't Touch This or too legit to quit. Well, they were, as Hammer would say, proper. Just play them and see what happens. Folks will try to pull out their best versions of the typewriter or the MC Hammer or one of the many dances that he has become famous for. Bands That Make You Dance, he was the original. Number three, Girls Just Want to Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper. Time After Time may get all the love, but Girls Just Want to Have Fun is where it's at in my house. Here's where I learned a lesson. My baby girl learned the lyrics to this song after only one listen. Even that part that no one really knows, but everyone sings anyway, when the working day is done, oh girls, girls just want to have fun. In fact, that's how you have to say it in my house, fun. There's a message here of empowerment that all girls should hear, and I'm just going to say that we're off to an early start.
Now you can look to the sun and spot the moon and see Snoop Doggy Dogg step into the room with the G-Funk, 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 follow me, follow me.
Number four is Pump Pump by Snoop Dogg. It doesn't feel like it to some of us, but Doggy Style was more than 20 years ago. In some quarters, that qualifies it as throwback music. In other quarters, the fact that it was Snoop's debut album qualifies it as throwback music. And the other half doesn't care, just like they don't care about all of his name changes. Pump Pump was a gem deep in the track listing on that album. I don't even want to think about how my little girl found out about it. It was my little one's first lyrical crush, though. She's now added Talib Kweli and Rick Ross, Don't Ask.
Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Saturday night and we in the spot. Don't believe me, just watch.
Number five, Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars. This song is only considered current because of the year it was released. It's a throwback in the purest sense. Heck, everything about this dude is throwback. In fact, I'm sure somewhere Mars Day is saying, you can't steal my style, I still have it. And Prince is just basking in the homage. Whatever. The Uptown Funk has become a favorite of dancing flash mobs everywhere. It doesn't make the song any less catchy. It's got horns from the 70s, lyrics from the 80s, and attitude from the 90s. What's old is new again, every 20 years, almost like clockwork.
When it comes to rapper, who the baddest dude? Still don't get it. obsession. What procession, dog? We've been stressing, shit been a mess, and we've been dealing with this depression since way back. But you ain't gotta say that. That's the greatest lesson. Slave to our possession, greed the devil's favorite weapon. Fight to the death, only the greatest left.
Thanks to Don for the laughs and the insights. That's it for today's show. But I'll leave you with a bit of one of my favorite tracks from one of my own favorite Dallas living legacy artists, R&B icon and fashion-forward deep thinker Erykah Badu. The song is Cleva, from her sophomore album Mama's Gun, and its lyrics get me every time. This show is produced by myself, with engineering assistance from Brian Elledge. Until next time, thanks for listening.